Ben, buddy, week two of self-isolation. Where are you right now? What's happening? Please paint a picture.
Well, I'm in the home studio right now. a little more sophisticated than last week. We've got some gear here in place that was safely delivered by our producer Amal Delich. So that's good. But yeah, I've been out on those walks that we were talking about last week. That was a good recommendation by you. Been cooking a lot and trying to make lots of good food, trying to eat relatively healthy, but it's weird, man. I'm sure it's weird for everybody listening to this. I'm sure it's weird for you, but it's just unlike anything I've ever experienced, really.
Yeah, I am also in the home studio, thanks to Amal Delich for doing a little safe drop of some podcasting equipment at my front door, which I was able to retrieve and set up with minimal effort here. I've made the mistake again of sitting up right in front of the fridge. So as soon as you mentioned you've been cooking, I remembered, oh, I've been cooking too, and there's food in the fridge that I could eat massive quantities of right now. So that's not good. I said I was going to shift to looking outside, and that's something that I need to do going forward. And yes, the walks are great, but here as we record this on Monday, March 23rd, raining, snowing earlier, this is not good.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not not the kind of weather that makes you think about baseball. It is weird to think that under normal circumstances, this would have been opening week. You know, Thursday would have been the beginning of the baseball season, and obviously the Dome would have been closed for that as the rain and snow continues to fall here in Toronto. But it's just bizarre. I mean, it's going to be a spring unlike any other. You know, clearly we don't know exactly how long it's going to last, but you know, you are going to be reminded of those things as those dates come up where the season would have started this week under ordinary circumstances.
How are you getting food? How are you getting food into your home right now?
Been doing some grocery delivery, yeah. which has been okay. I'm sure you've experienced the same as far as the items that sometimes you request aren't necessarily in stock. So you have to get a little creative, but
well, and you're a vegetarian too.
Yeah, exactly. It's even tougher. So, yeah, I mean, it's basically, I've just realized like I have to order a lot of food because, you know, normally I don't necessarily, it's not like I'm one of those people who eats every meal out, but I'm realizing now, like when you eat every meal at home, like you just go through so much stuff. Like because every tea, every coffee, like every single thing is at home. You just like, I find myself, I'm going through a lot.
Oh, for sure, man. The a really unpleasant development this week has been that everyone else has discovered the grocery delivery. So of the many services out there, like it's hard to find a place that's got a window like within, you know, 3 or 4 days. You know, there's one really popular one that a lot of people use that, you know, if you order today, you can get in like 2 weeks. So that's created some challenges here. And like you said, going through quite a bit here at home. I would encourage everybody out there who's in similar situations to us to support local independent places if you can't. So, you know, you mentioned coffee and we're obviously all drinking a lot of coffee right now. Like, hey, go get your coffee from a local roaster. You know, I've got a little delivery that should be coming in today from a place nearby called Birds and Beans, which is, you know, they're not paying us any money for this, but that's somewhere, a local place that you could support. On the weekend, I tip back a couple of left field brewery beers. So, you know, if you're going to drink beer or wine, maybe don't go to the places that people normally go to purchase those things and order them from a local spot and support a small business at this time, because those places are really hurting. And a lot of places are actually offering pretty good delivery rates now and you know, expanding their deliveries zones and doing what they can to bring people what they need in terms of food and alcohol, you know, and they'll safe drop it. Or, you know, if you're going to get a pizza, like don't go to a chain, you know, get a local pizza shop to make you your pie. And there's a lot of places that'll, you know, they'll come out and give you a curbside pickup, or they'll deliver it to your door and safe drop it if you pay with credit cards. So I would encourage everybody to do that.
I will say, I agree with you, Arden. I will say I tried very hard this weekend to support a certain local brewery with an order, and they were apparently overburdened because I wasn't able to get through. So it's good to see that other people have that idea, and yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think about the businesses of all kinds, but yeah, certainly food and beverage businesses locally based, like their businesses, I'm sure, slowed down dramatically. Just as, I mean, you look at the whole economic consequences of this thing, and we're not going to get into that necessarily because that would be a whole podcast in itself, but economically, this is shutting down so many different things. And to the extent that we can help, I mean, that's a good thing to keep in mind.
So I know I'm chipping away at a bunch of features here this week. Obviously, we were doing the podcast here, and you and I are going to be pretty active on social media as the Blue Jays replay Blue Jays Classics and Blue Jays Rewinds. Tonight, Monday, March 23rd, you can watch Game 4 of the 1992 ALCS, 8 o'clock p.m. on Sportsnet, and Ben and I will be watching that along with you and tweeting and interacting if you want to get at us. At Arden Zwelling or at B. Nicholson Smith on Twitter, at Shai Davidi. Another good one, I saw a threat from Jeff Blair that he was going to participate as well. So I'll be interested to see his thoughts at SN Jeff Blair on Twitter. So that's kind of what we got going on this week. What are you working on right now?
Working on a story that should have out in a couple days on a Canadian draft prospect named Owen Casey's, considered one of the top draft prospects in baseball leading up to the June draft, which of course is scheduled for June 10th to 12th. And this is a Canadian guy, 17 or 18 years old, from Burlington, left-handed hitter, really powerful. In the game against the Blue Jays, when the Canadian junior national team played the Blue Jays, he hit one off the batter's eye against a pro pitcher. I mean, that's the kind of power that this guy has. And he would be expected to go in the top few rounds of the draft. Now, of course, we don't know when the draft is going to happen. So he doesn't know when the draft is going to happen. He doesn't know where he can train, when he can next play. Gyms are an issue because they've closed down. There's no way for him to compete formally and develop further as a player at this point. So the story will basically look at, you know, where he's at, how he's trying to stay in shape. He's basically got these 75-pound sandbags that he's hauling across a field where he lives near Burlington. So, you know, it's kind of old school to try to stay in shape that way. And you definitely feel for draft eligible players. I mean, this should be a dream. This is when a lot of young players realize their dream of going pro and having that chance to take their game to the next level. He doesn't have that chance now, or at least it's in limbo. It's very uncertain. So the piece will basically look at where he's at and kind of having some fun writing that one right now. Obviously, difficult circumstances, but I do think it's kind of an interesting situation for a young draft prospect to be in.
Well, yeah, and you think about this with the Canadian Olympic Committee obviously recently announcing that they're not going to be sending athletes to this summer's games if they go on as planned. A lot of that was because none of these athletes are training because they can't. You think about swimmers, pools are closed. Anybody who wants to go to a gym, any type of the fitness facility is closed right now, as it should be. We shouldn't be having a bunch of people in close space with each other, sweating and breathing heavily and dropping all kinds of moisture all over the place. Like, this is not what needs to be happening right now. So yeah, you think about ball players right now and how so many of them who were in major league camps or minor league camps have now had to scatter home. You think about how these guys could possibly stay in shape, let alone work on their skills when it comes to hitting, or, you know, if you're a pitcher, where are you going to throw? Who's going to catch you? If you live anywhere in, you know, the northern part of the continent, and obviously Canada or the United States as well, it's still cold. You can't just, you know, necessarily go out to a park or something and, you know, have somebody that you know catch you. Like, you might need to try to find some sort of indoor facility where you can throw. Not everybody is going to have those resources and able to stay in shape.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty crazy. You think about our own lives and how it's become more difficult to stay in shape, and athletes are in that same boat in a lot of ways, because especially for players on the rise, they don't necessarily have these private home gyms or workout facilities. They're kind of figuring it out. But I guess in contrast to that, you've got a guy like Jamie Romack, who's another Canadian. You wrote about him last week, and he's able to basically go and play business as usual because of the way that Korea has handled some of their response to COVID-19. And it seems like he's at the spot now in a lot of ways where a lot of these Canadian players or a lot of these North American players want to be at in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk to him, obviously, in the KBO. And then also I talked to Andrew Albers, who's in Japan. in the NPB, and their teams are still having activities. Obviously, they're not having regular season games right now. They are playing exhibition games in Japan behind closed doors, no fans in the ballparks. And in KBO, they've been playing inter-squad games. Same deal, no fans in the ballparks, but they're streaming all of these games so fans can watch them from home. It's a bit of an eerie kind of feel seeing these pro ball players, particularly in Korea, where a lot of them are actually wearing masks during the games. But you got to take every precaution you can. But because of the way those countries have responded to COVID-19 and the way that they flatten their curves, they're able to have events like these and gatherings like these. And obviously they're taking precautions. Players are being tested twice a day for their temperatures. They're not being tested for COVID-19 every day, but they're being, you know, having their temperatures taken. They're, you know, symptoms are being monitored. If anybody feels even a little bit under the weather, they're out of there. Like, they're not anywhere near. And you know, this obviously isn't to say that South Korea or Japan are out of the woods on this thing yet. I mean, the more we learn about this, the more it's really becoming clear that this isn't something that we're just going to be dealing with through March, April, and May. This is something we're going to be dealing with through 2021, maybe even beyond. But, you know, a lot of the social distancing efforts and really the cooperation of the public in South Korea and Japan, when they first went through their outbreaks, basically 2 weeks prior to when we did, because they were about, you know, 10 to 14 days ahead of where we were, a lot of those responses proved effective. And yeah, that's why guys like Jamie Romack and Andrew Albers are currently participating in baseball activities. They don't have actual games to play in that matter, but they are able to continue working and training and actually facing competition, which is obviously a lot more than we're seeing in North America right now.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that North American players, I'm sure, would be longing for after a certain amount of rest, especially just as you're starting to gear up for that season, you're almost to opening day and everything gets cut short. So, I mean, it's not, as you're saying, I mean, they have these masks on, they're playing in front of empty stadiums in some cases, so it's obviously not where we want to be, but that's such a step forward, assuming that they're doing it safely compared to where we are now. So in the course of your conversations with Albers, with Romack, did anything, I mean, we've talked to Albers before. He was on this podcast a couple years ago, I think. So you've certainly gotten to know him a little bit, but did anything stand out from your conversation with him and where he's at now as he's kind of reflecting on all this from Japan?
Yeah, and if I'm sure that you'll throw it into the podcast description, our conversation that we had with him a couple of years ago, just about his life in Japan and going over there. Like, he was a guy who grinded through the minor leagues for years and years, and a lot of what we talked about was what the reality is like for minor league players right now, who were sent home from facilities and who we all understand the challenges that they face in terms of income. A lot of minor leaguers work as Uber drivers or, skip the dishes, couriers, etc., gig economy work during the off seasons in order to make ends meet. And then they are counting on a paycheck that will begin to come in at the end of spring training. And they don't have that this year. So now they have had to go home, and beyond the challenges of staying in shape and maintaining your skills we mentioned beforehand, they have bills to pay and they don't have income. So a lot of them have had to go back to that gig economy, which obviously has been significantly pressured by everything that's going on right now. And a lot of those jobs just aren't there for them anymore. And it's been good to see MLB take some of the steps that they have in order to give the allowances to players that they otherwise would have gotten at extended spring training. But you're still only talking about like $400 US per week. So, you know, depending on where you're living, depending on what your lifestyle is like, depending on how many people you're able to cram into an apartment, it might not go that far. So I talked to Andrew a lot about just that and, you know, how fortunate he obviously feels to have ended up in Japan, where he's been there for two seasons now. I believe this is his third. You know, in that time, he's made more money than he did over like a dozen in affiliated ball before that. So, yeah, he's obviously very fortunate to have found an opportunity overseas. But he, you know, he was saying like, yeah, look, I would have been one of those guys, and I would have been one of those guys who's put in a very tough spot and would have had to make some very tough decisions. You know, I think you'll probably see at the end of this a lot of veteran minor leaguers just retire and leave the game and not be able to, you know, continue to chase their dreams because of the lack of baseball and the lack of paychecks here. You know, Jamie Romack, a similar guy who got up to the big leagues a couple times later in his career, but was that like typical quad A guy, right? Who would put up big numbers at Triple A, but just never really got his opportunity. I mean, he would have been in a similar boat if he hadn't gotten over to Korea. And obviously he's really happy to be playing over there and have those overseas opportunities right now. So it's interesting to talk to some of those guys who, you know, are very, they can very easily relate to what minor leaguers are going through right now in North America.
Yeah, and just to have the chance to play. I mean, that's something. I think you're right when you say that there will be players, whether it's minor league players or major league players, who just never resurface. You know, you think about, you know, here's just one example, right? Russell Martin, he hadn't signed. And I think, you know, if you're a catcher with his experience level, you probably don't need to grind your way through 6 weeks of spring training. So maybe you decide to sign late and latch on to a team that needs you. But is that going to be something he wants to do now? Or Clay Buchholz, who was on the Blue Jays last year, or Edwin Jackson, who I think was in camp with the Diamondbacks. I mean, depending on how long these delays last, you know, at a certain point, teams start going to those younger guys. There's going to be careers impacted on all sorts of directions by this stoppage.
Well, and even you think about, so it looks like we're going to have to postpone the draft this year, and maybe we get some news this week or, you know, in the coming weeks about how MLB, how the Players Association is going to approach all of this. But if you'd end up not having a draft this season and you have sort of this double cohort next season, there's going to be a massive impact there on even young players who aren't going to get their opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I talked about with Owen for the upcoming story. But you think about, like, even if they, I don't think they're going to totally cancel the draft, but let's say they shorten it to 20 rounds, which is a possibility that I've heard a few people within the industry float. So if they shorten it to 20 rounds, that means you have 20 rounds worth of players who otherwise would have been in pro ball, who are now, many of those players are now going to be in college. So then you have freshmen in college who are now essentially squeezed out of playing time because you have all these juniors and seniors who are getting the playing time there. So that's even if they shorten it. I don't think, you know, knowing how efficient, you know, it's kind of a, it sounds callous to describe the draft as efficient, but viewed from the perspective of a major league front office, they get so much production for so little money. So I have a hard time imagining that Major League Baseball would decide to cancel the draft, but it could be, I mean, I think it will be a draft that's unlike any that we've seen before.
Well, and MLB was already having very serious discussions about contracting the minor leagues and about, you know, cutting, trimming off a whole bunch of teams from affiliated balls. So we were already looking at a future before any of this started where we were going to see fewer minor league players, like fewer players who have opportunities to play pro ball. And then now you have to think about how this will accelerate that, how this will impact that. Because when you look at it and you look at what's happening in the United States right now, there is every possibility that if you and I are talking next week or 2 weeks from now, that the United States will have the most COVID cases across the globe. It is rising at such an exponential rate in the United States. And we all see the media reports of packed beaches and people who aren't taking social distancing seriously. Like, we all see the reports coming out of New York, which is just like such a disaster right now. The containment efforts and the mitigation efforts, like, just really don't seem to be having much effect in the United States right now. You and I talked about it last time we spoke about being in Florida when a lot of this stuff was beginning and thinking, man, like, people are being really cavalier about this. I know you and I were both hearing from, you know, friends and family in Canada who were talking about some of the measures that are being in place, and we're in Florida thinking no one's doing any of this stuff.
Yeah.
So I just think that things are going to get so much worse in the United States over the coming weeks, where 29 of 30 MLB teams are. Like, I'm having a really hard time. I don't even want to talk like this, but like, I have begun to consider the possibility that we do not even have an MLB season this year.
Wow, that is truly scary. And yet, if you're looking at things rationally and you look at, you know, what various projections are saying, what various scientists are saying, everyone is saying this is really serious. Everyone is saying that, you know, there likely are cases that are undiagnosed, that we don't know about yet. So those numbers might actually be small. you know, not to go down that path. I know people have other sources where they're getting their COVID-19 updates and they're coming to us for baseball. But, you know, I think that it's clear that this is not a short-term issue. This is not about to disappear in a couple weeks. And with that being said, Major League Baseball has to act in accordance with the CDC. They have to act in accordance with these other health bodies, or else they're just being completely irresponsible. So that means that they have to wait this thing out to some extent. And, you know, as you're saying, if it's going to get worse, which we expect it will in the US and to Canada to some extent, then there's no quick path to having baseball games. And, you know, obviously we're hoping for quick resolution, but there's no guarantee that that happens.
Yeah. So I have the World Health Organization's dashboard open here, and these numbers are, you know, constantly changing. We're recording this at 1 o'clock PM Eastern on Monday, March 23rd. As things stand right now, the United States has the third most cases across the globe with over 35,000. When I was writing about Jamie Romack in South Korea, like, I was looking at the South Korea numbers really closely. South Korea was considered to be like a major outbreak point, a place where they were having some real problems, where there, you know, was a ton of COVID, and they are currently 8th in the world with 8,900. And they were like considered to be like really, you know, as I mentioned, a major outbreak point. Like, you look at just in New York alone, in New York City, New York, you have 99 deaths. In all of South Korea, you have 111.
Wow.
So it's just the way things are going in the United States right now does not give me any reason for optimism that we're going to see baseball anytime soon. I hope I'm wrong. You know, that we all want to see baseball and we all want MLB to be back this season, but just the way things have progressed, I'm starting to really question how much of this season gets played, if it gets played at all.
Yeah, it's scary, obviously, first from a human perspective. We've got a lot of American friends and people who live in the States, and it's just, yeah, it's an awful thing. So there's no question about that. And then you start looking at the logistics side of things, and, you know, hearing Mark Shapiro over the weekend when he was talking about the timeline for resuming baseball, he was making the point that in his view, after a period of time where players basically cannot train, cannot do any sort of baseball activity, they're looking at 4 weeks. So, you know, if it's a 4 week spring training, then that further delays things. And I would think maybe you can do it in three, but at some point you're being irresponsible with players as well. So it wouldn't necessarily be a quick ramp up back to action.
And say, you know, 2 weeks into that spring training, a player gets a fever and they send him home and they test him and they say, yep, you've got COVID. And now it's, well, okay, so now we got to test everybody in that camp and we probably have to shut that camp down. Like, that's all it would take. It could be a bench coach who came down with it, you know, and his exposure to all these players. They would have to shut things down and take every precaution. Like, this thing could so easily face setbacks when they start trying to ramp it back up again. And then what are you going to do? Are you going to start this season without that team with only 29 teams? You know, the challenges that you could face at that point. You think about baseball. Last night, you know, it was just that typical, like, it's 2 a.m. and I'm still on YouTube for some reason. And I was watching, like, the Boston Red Sox spring training footage. And the Red Sox did some great stuff on YouTube, showing some awesome access behind the scenes at their camp. And David Ortiz was in camp. And, you know, Big Poppy, like, big gregarious guy. So happy to see everybody. But he is hugging everyone. You know, these guys are getting, like, cheek to cheek on these hugs. And, you know, he is dapping up everyone. And, you know, you see guys, like, putting their batting gloves in their mouths, or, you know, they're spitting everywhere. Like, it's all, you know, sunflower seeds are flying around. Like, it's almost like hard to watch with the context that we have now. Every 2 seconds, it's like, no, don't do that. Like, oh God, not that. So you think about just baseball and how possible it would be for something to spread through this game and through a team's camp. You know, all it would take would be, you know, one fever or, you know, one sore throat during whoever's spring training camp when they try to start this thing back up, and say they are able to try to start it back up in 2 or 3 months, and that could set the whole operation back.
Oh yeah. I'm sure when we're watching these old games on Sportsnet this week, I mean, you'll see the handshake lines, you'll see the high fives or the pile-on celebrations. And it really is like everything that you watch from the kind of pre-COVID world. Like, the amount of contact, the amount of stuff that's just lying out. And, you know, there's kind of different standards around what would be dangerous and what would be safe. You know, that definitely will raise some eyebrows in a way, because it is so different now, and it has to be different. And hopefully everyone's doing their part. But as recently as a few weeks ago, it was very much in that world of handshake, spit on the hand, reach for my hair, spit on the hand again, lick my hand, high five the whole team. Like it's a whole different world now. And that will obviously take some getting used to.
Guys would lick their bats.
Yeah.
Like, you know, or like, remember when Edwin Encarnacion would foul one straight back and he would smell the barrel of the bat?
Yeah. All those guys.
Puig would lick his bat.
Yeah.
It's going to be a different world when we come back.
100%.
You mentioned, you know, the Sportsnet replay of Game 4 of the 1992 ALCS, which will be tonight, Monday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. On Sportsnet. Just trying to end on a somewhat cheerier note here, Ben. So what are you looking forward to watching in that game?
Well, you know, I enjoy watching old baseball just for the differences in strategy, for the differences in technique even. Like we'll see more sinker slider type pitchers. You're not going to see guys elevating at the top of the zone. We'll see more slap type hitters than we would now, and fewer guys just trying to elevate it and get it into the seats with every swing, which is kind of fun. That's a style of baseball I like, and we don't see that when we're watching baseball in 2019 or, you know, hopefully in 2020. It's very much an all or nothing game now, so that's part of it. I think their strategic decisions were a lot different then. I mean, we're going to see Cito Gaston run with his guys like deep into the game instead of, you know, taking Dwayne Ward into the game in the fifth inning. Like, no way. They're going to use Dwayne Ward and Tom Henke at the very end of the game. That's it. It's going to be an 8-inning guy, a 9-inning guy, and you're not going to see that kind of creative managing that we've come to get used to in the last 5 years or so. So as much as it's the right strategic decision to do the things that managers do now, I like old school baseball like that. It is kind of fun. It's a throwback to, you know, when I was a little kid in this case and watching the game the way it used to be managed. So I get a nostalgic kick out of watching baseball in that kind of form.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of like, you know, if you ever watch like an old clip of hockey, like in, you know, the late 90s, even like the early 2000s of NHL hockey, and you kind of think, oh my God, these guys are so slow. You even look at like the style of play that was prevalent then, and guys are being clutched and grabbed and held, and, you know, the game is kind of a slog. Like, you know, this is going to be a similar experience with baseball, when you just kind of realize like, oh, not everybody coming out of the bullpen is throwing 99. You know, not every slider is like 89 miles an hour and attacking, you know, the back feet of hitters in the batter's box. The mistake I actually made earlier today, just thinking about watching this game tonight, was I went and looked up the Baseball Reference play-by-play of it, and I made it two batters into Oakland's first inning when I saw a sacrifice bunt after Ricky Henderson reached on air. I thought, okay, I'm not looking at it anymore. I'm just going to let this play out when I watch it tonight.
Yeah, and Ricky Henderson of all people, right? I think he would have found another way to get to second base. Like, it's, yeah, very much old school managing, but it is fun to watch that kind of thing, even if you know that, you know, you hear them describing like a right-hander coming out of the bullpen. It's like, yeah, he throws really hard, this guy, you know, 92, 93 coming out of the bullpen, like, watch out for this flamethrower. And now that's like, okay, that's pretty much the league average or below the league average for a starting pitcher, let alone for a quote-unquote hard-throwing reliever. So it is fun to just see how the game has evolved.
Yeah, Jerry Brown, the guy who dropped down that sacrifice bunt to move Ricky Henderson over, he hit .287 in 1992 with a .366 on base percentage. But let's just take the bat out of his hands.
Wow. And that was managed by Tony La Russa, was it not?
I believe so.
Viewed as a tactical, strategic genius. I mean, and it's not to take anything away from Tony La Russa. I mean, he accomplished a lot in this game and pushed it forward. But even the people at that time who were viewed as the cutting edge, I mean, whether it was La Russa or anybody else, I mean, it's 25, 30 years later, so much has changed.
So that'll be on Sportsnet Monday, March 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern. Follow Ben on Twitter at BNicholsonSmith, myself at Arden Zwelling. We'll be tweeting along, interacting with you. If you got questions, reach out. We're looking at our mentions. We'll be responding. Can be current Blue Jays questions or even just comments on what was going on in 1992. And we're going to have regular At the Letters coming up for you throughout the coming weeks and for as long as we're here in our home studios. Thanks to producer Amal Delich for setting this up and putting this all together. Ben, be well, my friend.
You as well. Talk soon.
Take it easy, everybody.